On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So one of the things I love most about having a podcast is you guys, you know, sending me emails and messages on Instagram, saying, you know, where you're following me from. And like, there's so many different countries that people write to me from, and I just love that part of it. So my new favorite friend on Instagram is Mark Partipillo. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce your last name, Mark, and I don't want to mess it up. So Mark seems like the German version of me, honestly. And so oftentimes I'll get people asking me, like, you know, I like your podcast, but English isn't my first language. And, or, you know, people that don't speak English, they're kind of asking for resources in their own language. And I'm kind of like, oh, I don't really have any. So whenever I find people in different countries, I always want to like really raise awareness about what they're doing. So you can find Mark on Instagram. It's M-A-R-C, and his last name is P-A-R-T-I-P-I-L-O. So I think I'm also going to link to his website in the show notes for this episode. So if you're in Germany and you want to connect with Mark, he has an Instagram account, but he also has a website, and it looks like he has a book. So I just was really excited to learn about him. For any German listeners, go and find Mark, and you guys can hopefully all connect with each other. So the other thing to let you guys know about is I've started working with Aeroflow Sleep to write a monthly blog post for them. So if you're not familiar with Aeroflow Sleep, they help people in the United States use their insurance to get their CPAP supplies. So they're like an online company where you call them or go online, and you can, you know, have them set up recurring deliveries of your CPAP supplies where you just kind of set it and forget it. They seem really helpful, and they're really making a big effort to raise awareness about sleep apnea, which is why I love working with them. So I had my first blog post went live last week. So I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. And it's a little bit about how to advocate for yourself, like in the doctor's office or in general, like to get your diagnosis of sleep apnea. So I feel like it's the kind of thing that a lot of you listening are already past that stage. But if you have someone in your life who doesn't yet have a diagnosis and they suspect they might have sleep apnea, it could be a great article to share with them. So that brings me neatly onto today's guest. So I actually found today's guest, Dr. Monique May, because she is on the medical advisory board for Aeroflow Sleep. So she's known as the physician in the kitchen. Dr. Monique May is a board certified family physician who specializes in addressing comorbidities through a healthy lifestyle. And she also hosts the blackdoctor.org show Veganish on Facebook. So she recently also released a new book entitled Doc, Fix My Plate. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Dr. Monique May. So, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Emma, for having me. My pleasure.
So I first learned about you through Aeroflow Sleep. So I was kind of talking to them about doing some blogging, and I kind of looked at some of the other content creators and experts that they had on their team, and so I noticed some of your blog posts or different content, and I thought I want to be friends with her. Just for people that are not familiar with you at all, do you want to take us a little bit through your background? So getting into medicine and then what you're doing with Physician in the Kitchen.
Sure. So again, thank you for having me. Thank you to your listeners and your viewers for spending some time. But my name is Dr. Monique May. I am a board certified family physician. And through my brand, Physician in the Kitchen, I help busy households enjoy healthy plant-based eating without impacting their hectic schedules. Let's see, let me give you the short version,
That's a
right?
big
Because I've
job
been around it.
right
It
there.
is. It is a big job. But as far as my path to medicine, I think it was just my life experiences. As a little girl, I actually had a chronic medical condition that required me to be in the hospital quite a bit. So I was in and out of hospital, so kind of learned the lingo, got the kind of the procedures down. And then when I was in high school, I took a or middle school actually, I took a health science class, and I was hooked. We learned about the human body. And I remember learning about the eye, I believe the kidney, the skin, and one other organ, I think the heart. And I was hooked. I was like, I need to learn more about this. So pretty much from ninth grade or so on, I knew I wanted to be a doctor. And so went on to medical, went to college, med school, graduated in, honored top 10% of my class. I was in the honor medical, National Medical Honor Society. Went on to do my residency in family medicine, where I was also, outstanding resident, and then practiced clinically for about 20 years, 20 or so years in a variety of settings, office, hospital, telemedicine, you name it. And then as far as how I've become a physician in the kitchen, I mean, just, one of my fondest memories of childhood, other than being in and out of the hospital, was actually spending time with my grandmother. She was a school cook. She had 10 kids, so nine that lived. So she gave birth to 10, nine survived. And so she had to feed a lot of people a lot of the time. And so I just remember being in the kitchen with her, and even being long distance. I was in New York, she was in Alabama. She would send me these care packages with this sweetbreads, called sweetbreads, a plain yellow cake, no icing, no nothing, but it was delicious. And so when she would send that to me, I would just feel so, warm and loved and so forth. And then unfortunately, we lost her to complications from high blood pressure and a stroke at the young age of 67. And
Oh,
so
gosh.
going through that made me really, kind of put all that together and just have the years telling people how to, what they need to be doing, but then really taking a closer look at that, like, what does that mean? Like, how can we start with something that's as simple as what we eat? So it all kind of evolved and came together as Physician in the Kitchen. And the name just kind of stuck because if literally I'm in the kitchen, if I'm
You're
not
a physician
doing
in the
whatever, so
kitchen.
I'm a physician and I'm in the kitchen because I love to cook, I love to experiment. So yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell.
That's great. I always find people that are total overachievers have to talk really fast because you're like, then I did med school, then I did this other thing, and it's like
I
so much
don't want
stuff.
anybody to sleep. I want to get it all in and hold their
Yeah, I
attention.
know. So here's the thing. I feel like on my podcast, I've done more than 100 episodes, and we really haven't talked a lot about this whole like weight loss and sleep apnea. Like we have from a couple of different angles, but I think one of the reasons it makes me nervous is that talking to so many people with this diagnosis of sleep apnea, so many of us have had a pretty shaming experience of going to our doctor and being told, you need to lose weight. That's a factor for so many people, right? Like it's one of the biggest things that you have some control over, and we're not given like the how to do that. So oftentimes I think that sometimes, it's not that helpful to tell people you just need to lose weight and that's going to help. And it does for some people for sure. Like I've interviewed a number of people who have managed to reverse their sleep apnea or radically improve it by a significant weight loss. So it's not that like we get that. It's just the how of how to get from that conversation about that we would like to lose some weight to improve our symptoms and to improve our daily life, right? The quality of our life, but it's the how. So do you have any suggestions for where people can start if they've had that kind of conversation with their doctor and they want to lose some weight to improve their sleep apnea, but they just don't know where to start?
Sure. And first, let me start. Number one, that's an excellent question. Number two, let me start by apologizing. I hate to hear when people say they've had negative experiences in a doctor's office. For that being said, I do apologize. If it were easy, nobody would be overweight or obese.
Right.
Nobody wakes up and says, I want to pack on 100 extra
Yes.
pounds for no reason, right? No one does that. And the more I kind of talk to people and with my clinical experiences over, because I used to be one of those doctors. I used to be that said, just, lose weight, right?
Yeah.
Go exercise, stop cutting, cut back on your calories. And yes, that is, the basic premise,
Right,
right?
which we know
Fewer,
that, but yeah.
right. But how do you get there? And what I think we sometimes neglect is really it's mindset. I really think we need to start, which is why mental health and counseling and all that stuff is so supportive and so helpful. Because again, you can tell somebody, I want you to go walk for 30 minutes 5 times a week and so forth. But until they A kind of dial in and recognize or identify their why do you want to lose weight? Yes, the doctor is telling you, but is there a personal reason? Do you want to prevent something happening to you like your grandmother at age 67? Or do
Yeah.
you have young children you want to see grow up? So when people start to kind of, I think, internalize that, they are more likely to take ownership of it. The other thing too is making sure, we do a lot of self-doubt and negative thinking, and we compare ourselves to other people so much, right? And that can be extremely harmful, so and detrimental, right? It doesn't get you anywhere because you don't know what that other person is dealing with. You don't know.
Yeah.
So why are you even comparing yourself to them? Look at what you're dealing with. And the other thing I tell people is, it's a process. Give yourself some grace. You didn't gain the weight overnight.
It's
You're not
not a
going to lose it
perfection thing, right? Because I feel like that is sometimes what sets people up for failure is they think I've got to, exactly stick to this plan. And
overnight.
by day seven, if they, have a day that doesn't go as planned, they just give up. Whereas it's really that constant going back to what your goals were and yeah, keeping on going.
Exactly. And setting realistic goals, I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is realistic goals. When patients will come in and say, oh, I need, my high school reunion is coming up in 6 months, or not even, 3 months, and I need to
Yeah.
lose 50 pounds. Stop.
Wow, that's my
That's not
husband.
going to, that's not realistic. And so you're already setting yourself up. You're already out the gate
Yeah.
before you've even given yourself a chance. You're setting yourself up for failure. So I encourage people to take kind of small chunks, set small goals. So what is it that you, number one, are capable of doing? So any conversation needs to start with a physical exam if you're at your doctor's office, right?
Yeah.
So if you have joint problems, if you have heart problems, whatever kind of underlying issues you may have, make sure those things are as well controlled as they can be. And then if it just, it can be something as simple as walking. It can be something as simple as chair exercises. If your mobility is not the best,
Yeah.
you can, if you can move your arms, you can do some actual significant calorie burning.
I
So,
know
I mean, I think.
so one of the people that I interviewed quite early on in the podcast was a man called Gary Knight, who's in England, and he had some issues which made it really impossible for him to kind of walk and run, but he was able to do the elliptical machine, and he started off like I think what was inspiring to me about him is that he just kind of started off from where he was, which was maybe being able to do 1 mile not quickly. And he built up over time and just kept adding distance and the time that he was doing every day. And that's how I think in the end he lost like 70 pounds over like a year, you know? And I think that a lot of his is also to do with nutrition, which we'll come on to. But I think for him, he was just like, he just decided like, no more excuses. I just want to, you know, I can do this. So this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to keep working on it, setting new goals. So that was really inspiring to me. This episode of Sleep Apnea Stories is sponsored by BetterHelp. How well we look after our mind really affects how we experience life. Therapy has been so helpful to me since I was diagnosed with sleep apnea. It helped me to work through the feelings I had about going undiagnosed for so long. It also helped me to adjust to living with a chronic condition. One of the best things about starting my podcast has been realizing I'm not alone in coping with mental health issues along with sleep apnea. Speaking to a professional therapist has helped me enormously to manage my anxiety and depression. BetterHelp is online therapy and it's much more affordable than in-person sessions. You can get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Emma. That's betterhelp.com/Emma.
And I think too, a couple of things that reminds me of is setting a or doing a food diary a lot, because again, it kind of goes back to mindset. Food plays a lot of roles. It's not just nutrition, right? It's not just, oh, I'm hungry, let me eat. Food can be a comfort, food can be a crutch, food can be, homie, lover, friend, right? I
A
mean, food
distraction,
can
food
distract. You're
can
bored, you're
stop you
sad,
yelling at
you're
your
mad.
children by keeping
Exactly.
eating.
And so if you're not recognizing those things, your triggers, what makes you reach for, the not healthy snack or what have you, you're not going to be successful, right? And then so keeping a 2-week food diary where you just write down everything you eat and drink. And remember, the calorie, calories can be liquid too, right? So anything other than water is going to have some kind of calories associated with it. So keep a 2-week diary and just write down not only what you're eating, what's going on at the time? Were you hungry? Were you sad? Were you, what is all going on? Were you standing over the counter eating your food versus sitting at a table, having a conversation, putting your fork down between bites? Think all that stuff kind of adds up. And then but something else you mentioned about where he kind of set the small goals and he said, I can do this. I would say we make time for what's important. And so if you decided, okay, today is the day, I'm really going to do this. I want to lose weight. I'm tired of huffing and puffing when I walk or whatever. Put it in your schedule. Don't make it an afterthought. If you say your feet hit the floor at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're going to be running until, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, schedule that workout and preferably probably earlier in the day before your day gets away from you. Because guess what? As the day goes on, particularly if you're a parent, busy work, worker, who isn't, other things are going to fill up your time. And then you what? You fall into the chair or the bed at the end of the day exhausted and you didn't work out. So I think for a lot of us, particularly some of us moms or working moms or working women who work outside the home, I'll put it like that. Dads, or anyone who's a caretaker, we put other people first, but women, we tend to do that more. And so it's okay to be selfish. And by selfish, I mean set aside 30 minutes, 10, if you just need a few, 10, 15, 20, whatever it is. But to say, unless the house is on fire, do not bother me while I get my workout in, I go for my walk or what have you, because you can't pour from an empty cup. And by taking that time for yourself, you're saying your actions match your words. Your words are, I want to lose weight. I know this isn't healthy, but your actions may not be supporting that. So when those two match up, I think you're more likely to be successful as well. And again, starting where you are is so important.
Yeah, that's great advice. So when it comes to the food part of it, do you want to talk a little bit about, so you trained as a chef?
So yes, I went to vegan culinary school, an
Yeah.
online culinary school. Yes, it
That's
was very
amazing.
exciting.
So I'll probably cut it all out, but my friend, so I just was reading a bit about your background and I was like, she should be friends with Dawn Hutchins. So my friend Dawn Hutchins is this woman who has like an after school cooking pro, like vegan after school cooking program for kids. And she also does a bunch of stuff with the Boys and Girls Club. And like, she's just a great woman. And so she was looking for people to help. You know, she expanded to lots of different schools in our area. And I was like, this is before I started podcasting. And I was like, that sounds really interesting. Let me do that. So it was so fun. We had the kids like plant gardens and you know, like grow their own food that we could then cook, and just like they loved it. It was so
That
great.
is so
So
cool. That's
tell
so
me
cool.
about what the reasoning behind the plant-based vegan part of that. Like, was it the health benefits of that, or what was it that drew you to that?
Pretty much. So, in 2020, we all know what happened, but during like right as it kicked off, I turned 50. I turned 50 in May of 2020. And I've got a scary family history. I've got cancer on both sides. I've got, as I mentioned, my grandmother, that's my maternal grandmother. My paternal grandmother died of heart disease. Obesity's in the family. So, as a physician, as a 50-year-old, I just was like, okay, taking stock, of what
Yeah.
I can do to improve my health, because I'm claiming another 50 years. And so how do I go into those next 50 as healthy as I can be? Because I already have high blood pressure.
Right.
My mom has it, so I had a 50-50 chance of getting it, and the coin fell not in my favor.
Yeah.
Just trying to control what I can control. And then I started just reading and educating myself, because unfortunately, when I was in med school and residency many, many years ago, we didn't really do a lot of nutritional
Right.
medicine. I mean, we learned some of the basics, don't get me wrong, but as far as like using food to actually treat or prevent
Yes.
or treat diseases was not really taught. And so I just became, interested as a physician. I'm used to being a lifelong learner. And so I just went kind of into that direction. Then I started watching certain documentaries about how food is made, like meats and so forth are, grown and processed. And
Yeah.
I was like, it's not very appealing.
No.
So, and just wanted to be, but for me, it was kind of an easy choice because I never was a real big red meat eater. Chicken and fish, sometimes. So, but for me, it really wasn't that hard of a sell. And so, and then it taps into somewhat of my little bit of a creative side, because you get to be like, okay, well, how do I replace that with this? And how do I make it taste good and
Yeah.
feel the same in my mouth and things like that. So, it for a variety of reasons, going plant-based was easy, an easy sell for me.
Can we give people some steps of changes they can make to the food that they're eating to be more healthy? Like, are there swaps people can make? Are there specific, like, I feel as though not everybody listening is going to become completely plant-based, especially here in America. But are there any particular, you know, ways that people can improve their health with what they're eating and not necessarily, you know, make the rat, like some people, my husband would think it was really radical to become a, you know, vegan. So have you got any ideas about that?
Sure. Yeah. And again, another great question, because this is one of the things I talk about is, never going to tell anyone to go and throw everything out of your pantry, freezer, and cabinets. That's not
Right.
realistic. But as you are shopping, as you're replenishing, I do encourage people to be mindful about some of the substitutions they can make. And so one thing that I have become aware of, and I admit I've kind of been sleeping on them for years, are legumes, lentils, and your beans. Those are a wonderful source of protein and fiber and B vitamins and calcium and iron, and
And they'll
even,
fill
if you,
children right up. Because I'm in the
And
middle of
they
the
should light
summer
that one
here
up.
with kids home from school, and I'm just like, how much can these people eat?
Definitely. And it's and they're so they are really just little powerhouses, and they check a lot of boxes. They're so doggone economical, and particularly dried over canned. If I admit I didn't buy more canned because I want something quick and easy, but I did. I just bought a bag of dried lentils the other day because I mean they're shelf stable. They can stay in your pantry for quite a while, and they're versatile. People eat beans all around the world from anywhere from breakfast to dessert. So if you are looking for something that can really be like your kitchen workhorse, and you just want to maybe just replace one meal a week, if you want to do a meatless Monday, or for lunch one day you are not doing any meat, I highly recommend it. I just made up a lentil loaf recipe. So instead of a meat loaf, a loaf made out of lentils. Delicious, delicious. And so I would recommend starting with that. I also recommend, if I had to say just one thing that people could do, is cut out a lot of the processed foods. Because you talk about inflammation, that has been, those foods have been linked to inflammation. So what do I mean by processed? The further away from the ground it is, that's processed, right? So that
Things that
white
have a
rice.
lot of ingredients as well. Like if something has 25 ingredients, it's probably quite
Exactly. If
processed.
the ingredient list reminds you of your 10th grade chemistry class, that is highly processed, right? And you're exactly right. So, you want to get whole grain, whole foods, whole unprocessed foods. Because again, even if it's going to be one or two meals a week, or one or two, a day or so forth, if you start there, those are again going to give you fiber. They're going to fill you up. And what happens when you're full? You eat less. Right. And so a side effect of that is weight loss, because you're full, you're suppressing that the hormone, the hunger hormone, ghrelin, which is like I it reminds me of the word gremlin, like something that's supposed to eat everything up. So that hormone is kind of turned off when you are full versus I mean that's a hormone that drives hunger. And then we have leptin, which is a hormone that is a satiety that tells us, okay, stop eating. So when you fill your body up with and staying hydrated, I cannot say enough about drinking water, or unsweetened tea, coffee without a lot of creamer and sugar, because a lot of times we mistake thirst for hunger. And so we think, we were, oh, I'm hungry, and they'll reach for something, as opposed to actually maybe drinking 8 ounces of water and waiting about 15 to 20 minutes and then seeing what happens. So by the time they say that, by the time you actually recognize thirst, you're actually probably about 10% dehydrated. So particularly in the summer months where it's hot,
I'm in
staying on top of the
Florida. It's so hot.
oh my goodness. My dad is right now at a family reunion in Alabama, and it's like 105
Yeah, it was
degrees.
100 degrees yesterday. It's so
Wow.
hot.
So,
We're just
yeah, so stay
inside drinking water. It's all you
good,
can do.
good. And wear your sunscreen when you go outside. But yeah,
Yes.
it's so I staying hydrated. I think I cannot underestimate or under overstate like the realizing how important it is to stay hydrated.
So people who, I think one of the things that I think is really interesting about sleep apnea is this disruption to your hormones like ghrelin and leptin. Like if people have undiagnosed, untreated sleep apnea, like that can get disrupted, right? Did you want to speak a little bit to that? Because I think one of the big things with people with sleep apnea is finding a treatment that works and getting your sleep disorder treated, and then it becomes more straightforward to kind of do the other changes just because you're not exhausted all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about whatever underlying issues you have, getting those addressed and tweaked and fine-tuned is definitely going to be the way to go. Like, just think about it. If you're about to take a long car trip and your car needs new tires, and your transmission is sputtering, and you want to go get that stuff taken care of first before you go on the trip. So, or else you're going to be on the side of the road probably before you get to the first exit. So, you want to do those things. But yes, studies have shown 6 to 7 hours of sleep is that kind of that golden nugget that you want to hit. And what happens with sleep apnea is that you're sleeping, but it is not quality sleep at all. You're waking up, there are many arousals throughout the night because you're stop breathing and your body is constantly kind of just re-revving, trying to, get oxygen in. So those disruptions definitely can affect your circadian rhythm, which is your day-night cycle, your melatonin production, the hormones that we've mentioned, because your body is a very fine-tuned machine. And when something is not working like it should, things are going to get thrown off out of balance, basically. So yeah, I mean, I think addressing the underlying sleep apnea will then help to correct some of those hormonal imbalances, which will give people more energy, which will allow them to be more aware of their body cues as well, and then be able to do the things they need to do to be successful in their
I
weight
think
loss journey.
sometimes people have it backwards, right? They'll kind of say, I don't want to go to the doctor. I'm pretty sure I have sleep apnea. I'm just going to lose weight and that's going to help my sleep apnea. When to me, the first step would be go to your doctor, get a diagnosis, find out how severe your sleep apnea is, get an appropriate treatment option. And then once you're doing that, you're going to just hopefully feel better. And when you're feeling better, doing exercise and addressing nutrition and all of that becomes a lot more doable. I think if you're trying to do this from extremely sleepy during the day and just exhausted from the fragmented sleep, like it's just almost impossible. People are fighting an uphill battle.
I agree. And it's important to get a diagnosis, number one, to make sure it is just sleep apnea. And I say that with air quotes just because the majority of sleep apnea we see is obstructive sleep apnea, which is obstruction, meaning the upper airway, the back of the throat is blocked, and it's either blocked by a thick tongue or excess fat tissue in the upper airway. And so when you're asleep and those muscles relax even more, the airway becomes obstructed and you can't breathe and you snore and that whole cycle starts. But there is a small percentage of patients who have central sleep apnea where the brain doesn't fire. The connection between the brain and the muscles of the diaphragm, the breathing muscles, don't fire. And so that is treated differently from sleep apnea. And then a small percentage of people have both. So getting a sleep study, getting a full evaluation, getting a sleep study. And also the thing about sleep apnea, because people can die from sleep apnea. It can cause heart arrhythmias, irregular heart rhythms. It can cause high blood pressure. It can cause heart attacks or be related to heart attacks. So it's not just, oh, I need to lose weight. Yes. But again, go get checked out. Make sure there's other things that don't need to be tweaked and ruled in or ruled out. Your thyroid hormone, are you diabetic? All these things. So I agree with you. I think a first stop should be at a doctor's office and find someone you can partner with, someone who you can have a good rapport, good relationship with. Because that's so important. That
It's so
is
important.
super important to have that good relationship.
Yeah, I just found a wonderful primary care physician, and not to say anything bad about doctors I'd had before, but when I went to her, I was like, oh my word, she's amazing. And so I think
Really?
sometimes, and she's very much like my partner in the whole thing. And I'm really like motivated and want to be as healthy as I can be. And I feel like together we're just like figuring out solutions. And whereas I think my doctors before were just, they don't have a lot of time, which a lot of these things are kind of structural, right? So they're kind of like, they have 6 minutes. So they're kind of like, hey, how's it going? Like I just think it's difficult to really get excited, but I love her. I thought it's really cool. Oh, all I was going to say was it's worth just saying that although weight can be a huge factor for a lot of people with sleep apnea, there are plenty of people who have a structural issue going on that isn't related to weight. So I think that sometimes people get this message like, just lose weight and it'll take care of your sleep apnea. But I really want to encourage people to go to their doctor because I feel as though, people are who it's not necessarily that they need to lose weight, it's that they have some sort of structure, like they need their tonsils removed or something's going on.
I agree. I...
Tell people where they can find you,
Yeah.
like what kind of things you have going on that people can join in on.
Yes, again, thank you so much. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. But I'm on all social media as Physician Kitchen. So that's Insta, that's TikTok, Twitter, everywhere. You can find me there. My products and services, you can also find listed on my Instagram bio. But I have a best-selling cookbook, Doc Fix My Plate, The Physician in the Kitchen's Prescriptions for Your Healthy Meal Makeover. It has over 50 vegan recipes, tips and tricks on how to set up and maintain a vegan or plant-based kitchen, and little snippets from my own personal journey toward a more plant-based diet. So I highly recommend it. I offer cooking classes one-on-one or group, and I am working on releasing my vegan Worcestershire sauce. So that is on my website as well. So
Oh
I'm
my
trying
gosh, how
to
exciting.
find everything. Yes.
That's cool. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, so they
And
can find
so,
the product that. I'm sorry. I
what?
was just going to say they can find my products at physicianinthekitchen.net. So,
And I'm going to link to all of these things in the show notes below this episode
okay.
so people can check them out there.
Sure.
And so, where are you physically located? So, if people want to work one-on-one with you, where can they find you?
Well, do I can work with anyone anywhere because of Zoom. Oh yeah, we jump on we
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's awesome.
And we do everything virtually. So yeah, you can go to cookingwithdrmonique.com. That's the link for the cooking classes. The link for the book is docfixmyplatebook.com. But yeah, my cooking classes, as I said, can be one-on-one. We do them weekly. You have a subscription. You can have access to them at any time, the recorded ones. And then yeah, we just get in there and
That's great.
I send you the menu beforehand or the recipes beforehand so you can prep, and then we get in there and we cook, and then you have a delicious plant-based meal afterwards.
It. Okay, well, thank you so much, Dr. May. This
Thank
has been awesome.
you.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, you can always reach me on Instagram. My handle there is @sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience to find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.